I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
FilmSack is brought to you by your help and support at patreon.com/frogpants.
Photography is rapidly becoming a high-priced commodity, and there is outright suspicion in some circles in the art world, a feeling that perhaps we're running out of saleable paintings and that photography is being pumped up, that an artificial market is being created, that photography is just a hype. Well, these are not easy questions to answer, but here in this gallery in Soho, there is a fabulous exhibit of violent and sexy photographs.
Instant star of the world of chic.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to FilmSack. FilmSack episode 402, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind.
Second puberty for Scott, number two.
Stupid thing still persists. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian Faye Dunaway.
Oh, that's clever. Yeah. Oh, hi.
Yeah.
And welcome to my very modern and chic 70s apartment of the future, where things are totally not creepy and weird. Over here is my dark room, which we all had, where I developed pictures of dead and or angry people in curious poses depicted in various stages of undress. So, no uggos. Speaking of no uggos, don't go into the bedroom unless your self-esteem is at least a 9. It's full of mirrors. Have you ever seen your face and your own ass at the same time? It's enough to give someone a psychotic break. Or if you're already crazy, who knows? Maybe it will give you a moment of clarity. Anywho, over here is my giant... Or maybe it's a rooster. A cock, if you will. Hey, is that why I bought this? Do I have some kind of repressed sexual frustration that's creeping into surface and manifests itself into my home decor? Nah, it's probably just a giant chicken. Chicken hype!
I noticed the rooster, but I forgot about it. Yeah.
Was it my imagination, or did the rooster was it larger in the beginning and then later on there was a smaller rooster, or is that just...
I don't know. Maybe it was a camera angle, but it did seem like it had shrunk a little bit of shrinkage on the
right. In the beginning, rooster. Your cock was all huge, yeah. And in the end, it was all small and shriveled.
Diminutive. Yeah. Diminutive cock. Yeah. Oh, man, that sounds nasty. All right. Also with us, Randy. Lady, I think your eyes are broken. Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
Randy.
Did you know that I have a condition where ESP causes me to say things before I actually say them?
No.
Yeah, it's a weird look into my future, but it's kind of confusing. Happy New Year, guys. It's such an affliction. Oh, congratulations on becoming a grandparent, Scott. You have a beautiful 1-year-old grandchild there. Aloha, Scott. Brian. Hey, guys. How about Mike Pence, huh? That was weird. Yeah. Expendables 5. Stallone is just like a Saturday night at Ibbitt's house. Aloha, Scott. Brian. Rest in peace, my friend. The three of us who remain will miss you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We won't talk about who that is at all.
Wow.
Probably be me, but.
Will you wake up with a scream and shout our name, though, Randy, when it happens?
Yeah, do that.
Later in the episode. It's going to blow your mind.
Okay, great. Finally with us, Brian, they really should question the horrible neighbor with the angry dog, Ibbot.
They should question everybody in this thing. All right, quick. Now, I want you guys to cover your eyes. I don't want you to be looking at the screen. I want to do a quick spelling bee. Please spell the last name of Rene Auberginois.
Oh, my gosh.
O-D-O.
See, it's difficult, isn't it? Well, I'm here to help you with this simple mnemonic device that you can use anytime you need to remember how to spell Auberginois. Okay. For example, here's a very, very easy phrase to remember to help you get the letters in the right order. Abundant uncovered boobies everywhere, right? Just overused nudity occupying intermittent scenes.
That's nice.
Or maybe this one right here. Always unfortunate, Bison ended Raul Julia's Oscar nominations on screen. Incredible star.
Incredible star.
And finally, a unibrow brightened every role Jones optioned next over interim 70s.
Nice.
What? Did he ever separate that thing? I mean, because it needed some parting.
The brow of Tommy Lee Jones.
I think eventually it receded toward away from each other, and they're fine now. But Tommy Lee Jones. And the other thing I noticed, Ibbot, that you mentioned to me on one of our other shows was just how thick his neck is in this.
Right?
Just the thickest neck. It's weird.
Super thick neck, like halfway down each shoulder, his neck starts. But then you look at stuff like The Fugitive and newer movies, you know, the space thing that he did and the cowboy thing that he did. I don't know.
Are you implying that he had cosmetic neck surgery?
No, I'm saying that thing shrunk down. It shriveled like a raison.
Yeah.
Maybe he has some kind of thyroid problem and they fixed it.
Maybe he lost it. I want you to check every neck house, hen house, guard house, and outhouse within a 2-mile radius.
Because at one point in this movie, you notice if you could get in there with a ruler, you know, really squeeze in there, you'd go, oh, this is wider than your head, even with the mullet on. Like, that's crazy.
He was doing a lot of those neck scrunches things, like at the gym. He was doing those.
Must have been. Crunches. I mean, they were like two power cables on both sides of his neck, just these monstrous neck thing. But
you know what?
Yeah.
I don't care.
I see what you did there. That was pretty good. So, the movie is this, The Eyes of Laura Mars, which I can't remember how we came upon it or to it.
I'll take full blame for this one, because this was a movie that I remember, you know, my dad was taking me all these movies, weekend visitation. Dad was taking me all these sci-fi and fantasy movies, Ghostbusters and all that stuff that came out in the late 70s. And I remember seeing the poster for this all the time, this freaky Faye Dunaway in black and white with her eyes kind of glowing. And it freaked me the heck out.
Freak out.
And when I later found out that the movie was about a woman who could see people get killed before it happened, I thought, oh, all right, well, this is a totally different movie. I thought this was just some sort of, you know, boring, talky 70s thing. And
what?
Guess what?
And it's like a sex romp without the romp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's no romp. Yeah.
It's like a sex disco.
It's like a dirty... how do I explain this? It's not, none of this is titillating. It's all just kind of, there's a blank face lady with half a boob showing there.
But
okay.
It feels like it's probably titillating for the time. Like if you had been middle-aged when this movie came out, you might've found it titillating.
I absolutely agree.
This really is everything that
TV wanted to be.
What did?
And it really does tell
everything
us.
Everything the what wanted to be?
Wait, hold on, Brian, what'd you say? The MTV?
Everything that TV wanted to be.
Oh, TV wanted to be. Got it. Okay. With the exception of the nudity, I guess, because they couldn't get away with that. Sorry, Randy, go ahead. Continue your thought.
The line early in the film that really set the time for me was the reporter at the gallery opening asking if photography was going to replace paintings.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, right. Because like we all live in a time when photography is free.
Yeah.
You know, it's not at all something that you would associate with only artists only competing to make great art.
Right. And, I mean, they're still out there. Obviously, you're going to go pay a huge amount of money for like a, I don't know who, I can't think of anybody right off the top of my head, but some famous photographer's original print of, her group shot of the Rolling Stones in 1968 or whatever. I mean, you're going to pay for that sort of stuff. And you're going to see that at auctions. But you're right. Like, the ubiquity and just average user access to, you know, full color, widescreen, high definition imagery is beyond the pale compared to what they probably thought we were going to get in 1978. Mm-hmm. Everybody's, and so, you know.
So, like, it's only 40 years old, but it feels like so old, this film. Mm-hmm. Like, all of these things about it, because it just, everything changed, you know, 25 years ago. Like, it's wonderful to look back in time, because at the time, I'm sure this was a very modern film. I'm sure everything in it felt right up to the minute modern.
Mm-hmm. No, it had to.
It is an absolute, you know, we've had movies here that are an absolute slice of the 80s, and this is no doubt an absolute slice of the 70s. You've got your disco, you've got clubs. I'm sure at some point in the background of one of these scenes, somebody's discovering cocaine for the first time and is going to spend the entire 80s taking it, snorting it.
Right.
But I mean,
I'm sure people looking at this film were like, wow, that the modern clothing, the styles of wardrobe probably looked so new and so exciting to some people and so discordant to others, right? Yeah. Like you look at modern clothing anytime and you're like, wow, that's weird.
Yeah.
But I'll bet it looked really weird to people watching this movie. And to us, we're just like, how quaint.
Well, I think that's partly why it doesn't age well, and I think movies in general don't age well. When there's like a strict adherence to the era, they don't age as well. Like you're in the moment too much. You have to broaden your horizons a bit. There's reasons why other movies in the 70s still hold up. It's because the focus wasn't on the cutting edge latest 1978 trend. It was on character and story and other stuff. And this movie, not that it doesn't attempt to do those things, but it just spends so much time in that 78 pastiche, you can't get out of it. It's just you can't freaking avoid it. It's just everywhere, all the time. Disco music, Shake Your Booty, freaking.
Right. Yeah, if Rene Auberjonois would have had a fondue pot going at his apartment party,
I'm
this
pretty,
would look more 70s.
I'm pretty sure there was one there,
yeah,
and it was, definitely, oh, yeah. it was definitely cooking.
Yeah,
and,
it was in use. Somebody had bread with cheese on it just ready to go somewhere in some room.
Let's put the fondue pot away, Benson, so we can place some Milborn on the glass coffee table.
And he's wearing what's that thing he was wearing? Like the big white pajama unit. And just,
oh yeah, that was very late 70s. The loose clothing. Velour. I love those things though. Those are so comfy.
Like wizard.
Yeah.
So were we meant to understand or think this was progressively trying to sneak the idea that his character was gay, and
even trying to sneak, there was
we weren't sneaking at all, because I felt like it wasn't absolutely spoken, but it was implied, because
it went right up to the line, stopped, and just kind of danced around there fabulously without crossing the line.
Did he? By the way, I got a check in the bucket question. Did he get killed? I don't remember.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. In the elevator, he was laying on Tommy's solitaire deck, which is now broken since he lost a card.
Right, lost one card. Yeah,
might as well kill himself anyway.
Yeah, Randy, you were saying. Yeah. Sorry.
Poor Tommy. I was just gonna say there is no doubt he's gay. He is not only portrayed that way, and I think Auberjonois did a great job of portraying the character. You know, the way he was directed, but every other man in the film who is glaringly straight is like portrayed that way, you know, like Tommy Lee Jones is portrayed, you know, the way, what's his character's name? John Neville.
John is
the, you know, the trope of the only cop in town. Right. And that's real, like that's real set. Mm-hmm. And Raul Julia is a wannabe rapist. Mm-hmm. And you know, like that is, he's really set. That's right. He's a work in progress rapist.
He is the
and least. He really is, you know?
Yeah.
And so like this Donald Phelps character, like that's what he has going for him. I'm the script doesn't really get that deep into the characters, right?
Yeah.
You are given some things to go with, and it portrays them very flat. And so you're like, yes, he's gay, because that's all he's got. Like the character just isn't built out farther.
Sure. It's weird.
It's interesting the way they addressed it, because
you know, he's obviously very frustrated throughout the movie, and he seems to always be just a little bit on the outside. And then at the end, when one of the police officers is chasing him, and he's dressed up as Laura Mars, and they start calling him names while he's dressed up, and he just has this outburst of about name calling and maybe addressing right. the idea of all of this, you know, these slanders that yeah. were going on at the time. I don't know if I was reading too much into it, but I really felt like there was something there.
Mm-hmm. I think I picked up on that same thing. And okay. I mean, it didn't seem like, you know, him beating the paparazzi guy over the head with a purse
right.
was done for comedic effect. It was like, no, right. I mean, all right, this is, you know, mm-hmm. he's.
Because they lingered, because the director, Urban Kirshner, he lingered there afterwards mm-hmm. to kind of give us a little something.
Yeah, he hung around. You know what's weird is we're only 2 years away from him doing Empire Strikes Back. That's what's weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because this doesn't feel anything like Empire Strikes Back, but like any remnant of whatever this is did not make its way into Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back. And that's fascinating to me because.
No, but look at, yeah, you know, I mean, but look at how many, not just Irvin Kirshner, but like so many people who were. Whose stars were kind of just beginning to rise, Raul Julia and Tommy Lee Jones and Brad Dourif and even Rene Auberjonois. Mm-hmm. And then you had Faye Dunaway, who's kind of at the other end of that, who yeah. had a much bigger career in the 60s and early 70s mm-hmm. and was just kind of at the tail end of all
And
that.
No offense, but everyone's bad in this. Like, I think Faye Dunaway is terrible in this.
They're absolutely yeah. over the top.
I think it's bad direction.
Tommy Lee Jones is good until we get this stupid twist, and then it's dumb. Mm-hmm. But he's fine. I mean, he's delivering his lines and doing his stuff, but she is ridiculous, man.
Go ahead, Randy.
I when you were naming all of them just now, I wanted a trope alert. Can you give me one trope alert?
I can totally give you one. Here you go.
Who done it? They all seem like they yeah. might have yeah. like yeah. I got a little tired of that. Like when we first find out that that Grima Wormtongue has a spotty history of being in and out of prison,
yeah.
I was just like, oh no, the film's gonna try to tell us that he's the killer, mm-hmm. and then of course we had to believe Raul Julia is the killer. Like that, he was your initial suspect, right?
He's said it very early on to be like, oh, he could totally do it, and then you're wondering, yeah. all right,
and then you spend a huge chunk of the movie thinking Faye Dunaway is actually the killer. Right. And she's somehow having an out of body experience during the murders. And you're like, come on. Like this trope is like, it's like boring at a point.
Really?
So when Tommy Lee Jones finally busts through the window and you realize he's the killer, like, come on, movie.
Yeah.
I actually enjoy the Clue type formula here. I mean, I know Clue is after this, but I enjoyed the fact the movie I'm watching has told me essentially one of these characters is the killer. Yeah. So I don't have to worry about, is there some kind of character that was mentioned in passing?
Hasn't been introduced yet.
I mean, I literally get to focus and think, okay, would Tommy do it? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. How about John Neville? He seems a little bit creepy as well. And so I actually liked that because they gave me and let me know this was the movie I was watching.
I'd like it more if they gave you clues that if you paid attention, you'd say, oh, I think it might be Tommy Lee Jones. But because what they're doing is they're basically filling all the glasses up evenly. Like, oh, let's look over at Raul Julia. Oh, he's being a dick now. How about let's look over at this guy. No, he's kind of being a dick too. And kind of filling all those glasses up equally so that you're, you know, none of them have any sort of, you don't have any sort of clue as to like, oh, wait a minute. Tommy Lee Jones' glass is just a little bit more full because of this one thing.
Mm-hmm. And like I say, for me, it could have been Faye Dunaway all along. And I was really enjoying her portrayal of this troubled person, this artist, you know, like I thought it was going really, really nicely. And I was all set to be mad at the movie. If it turned out that she was actually the killer, I was just going to, by the way, the movie sets you up to believe that by having Tommy Lee Jones show her pictures of murders that she can't have possibly seen. And she somehow recreated them in art. And it's like, that's really freaking clever. Come on, movie. You can punch at this weight class. Why don't you do that more?
Yeah.
The only thing that speaking of one that this glass was a little bit short, if you will. Mm-hmm. The little person in this movie that was meant to, he just kind of showed up to always make the scene just a little bit.
It's just a little weird. Yeah.
A little weird because the character wasn't really given anything to really say.
He would just
suddenly show up and then climb a ladder and be standing over top of Faye Dunaway and looking down at her crown. And I'm like, what is going on? You know, he's at the gravesite and he's like, he's just walking around by himself. I'm like, what is he doing?
He's used as just kind of window dressing, unfortunately. Like, it would have been cool to have his character developed a little bit more. Like, all right, is he a model that she pulls in when she wants a little person to be in the shot? Or is he, you know, in a work related fashion that's unrelated to him being small? Like, is he just,
I would have enjoyed the gaffer? I would have enjoyed the end if he had been on some stilts. You know, he was a murderer. That would have been
just a trench coat.
That would have been the twist that no one would have seen coming. Son of a.
Yeah.
How did we not see that?
Him and two of his friends in a trench coat. That's
right. There you go.
Yeah. That would have been cool. I don't know, man. It's just one of those. This is one of those movies where I think this feels like that Elliot Gould thing that always freaks me out, where the lady's head ends up in a fish tank. Mm-hmm. I just know if I watch it now, it's just going to be mostly boring dialogue and a one scene that's not nearly as gross as I thought it was when I was seven. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's how this feels. I think if I'd have seen this one as a kid, I'd have been, oh, man, every time there's that sound, her eyes go wide open and all she can see is a murderer walking around. Like, it would have seemed super intense. In this case, it's just not even that fantastic. It's just sort of like, mm-hmm. Every once in a while, she gets like a little weird migraine, and then that's it. That's the movie. That's it.
It's weird. So much better with the dead zone with Christopher Walken when he'd see stuff happening.
Go ahead.
I just want to respond to what Scott just said, because it sounds like the complaint here is that the movie wasn't about enough, like that there could have been a subplot around her art or something of interest, mm-hmm. right? That would have drawn you forward rather than just making you mark time waiting to find out.
There's absolutely, and that feeling is genuine, because originally John Carpenter gets the top billing on the writing. He originally created an 11-page treatment and had no further involvement after that. And it was rewritten to a screenplay. So I think the seed of the idea was very interesting, but I think once you actually try to execute, you realize that watching weird photo shoots is not a good time.
Yeah,
it's not a lot of fun.
It's a Stephen King idea, kind of.
Right.
A lot of Stephen King, this immediately reminded me of it premise-wise. It's just the execution that didn't really do it for me. And by the end, it was... I have so many questions about how it could be Tommy Lee Jones's character. Like, come on, man. Like, you got a lifetime, decorated detective who's solving all sorts of crimes. And by the way, when we see him alone at crime scenes, he's not sitting there. I mean, he's doing work. Like, they never really give a nod. The only nod is early on when he's at the gallery and they're looking at a giant boob on the wall. And he says to her before he knows who she is, he goes, yeah, I think some of this stuff's just smutty, whatever. And so there's like a hint as to his motivations. But that's it. And I just don't buy it. Like, by the end, it's like when that turn happens, I'm like, all right, that's stupid. It's him, really?
We're never given any sort of motivation for him being the killer. And if it was Stephen King, we would have gotten some sort of reason that she was given this ability, you know, like,
a comet passing through the upper atmosphere.
Absolutely, you have to be a comet.
Like, her and Tommy Lee Jones both touching the same crystal skull at the same time. But some reason, like, the fact that, all right, she's a photographer, so her eyes are very important. It would be really cool if the reason she had this ability also made her an excellent photographer. Like, you know, it was just an extension of her abilities as a photographer that like gave her this, but no, it starts out of the blue for her. It starts with no reason. And there's no connection other than, oh, he's going to happen to be the guy who's investigating the deaths of all your friends is why.
Yeah. And why would he go through all this trouble? He's killed all the friends. I get it. he now knows, I guess, because he's investigating her, that she can see a point of view of it or whatever. You'd have killed her long before you fell for her. Like, just come on. Ugh. And that whole thing in the park where they're walking around going, oh, I don't know, it's so unprofessional of us. And the acting just went up to shit level, and it just got dumb. Toward the end, I was just like, really, guys, this is where we're going? And I like Tommy Lee Jones. I think that dude chews up the scenery. I think he's great. Even in this, I think he's good for what it is. But the minute he turns into that, it's dumb. Now, what's his name again? John what? The character? John Wesley?
Neville.
Neville. Okay.
That's a great detective name.
This annoyed me, though, because she's now slept. She's slept with him. They're together. They're going to run off together. That's all. And, you know, that's what she's been told. So they're way down the road on this relationship. And when he turns, she starts going, Neville, what's wrong, Neville?
Yeah.
And
right.
First, two reasons that's dumb. One, you wouldn't use his last name when this is happening because you already know him as John. And secondly, it really, really diminishes the evilness of the scene to just call anyone Neville. It's just so like Neville, stop it. Like, it's just a stupid name. And why are you saying his last name? Secondly,
I chalked up any of that social awkwardness up to me not being able to truly relate to this subset of people, because I could never, I don't live this life. I have no idea how these people may act. Obviously, their egos have to be huge. So I don't know if I could talk to someone like that. And I kind of feel like it's good that they give me kind of a cold distance, because that's what I feel towards them anyway.
Yeah.
Their characters.
They're not very likable, I can tell you that. And I also thought Raul Julia would have ended up with a bigger role here.
Raul Julia, if to me, was the jewel in this piece of crap.
Yes and no. Like, I hate the character, and I was repulsed enough that I kind of wished he wasn't in the film, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want him in there. The character, I agree with you. I didn't care for the character, but Raul Julia, man, he's like, yeah, I'll take this.
Yeah.
I'll just make
it. He's like, oh, you have a scene here? I'm going to eat it. I'm going to now eat the scene.
Just eat it up.
Yeah, that's his job. But I could either have gone for none of him or more of him, but the amount of him we got, I felt like it was a little lame.
Right. Yeah.
You know? You can only handle so much of that, I guess, but I don't know. At least it brought a little bit of interestingness to it. Right. Otherwise, there's just not a lot of likable people in this, and I feel like Faye Dunaway, who apparently on set was having fights with the director constantly, was sort of phoning it in at the end, and just a lot of moments of like, and that's it.
Exactly.
Brad Dourif's Tommy character, the limo driver, was probably one of the few that I could like. However, his character fell apart very quickly when he did not really react to Lulu's death. His character had been kind of flirting with Lulu throughout the movie, and after she had died, he was just still Tommy the limo driver, not Tommy the I've lost my mind because
despair, grief-ridden limo driver.
Right.
Do we have a favorite? I mean, my favorite thing he ever did was Deadwood. He's the doctor on there, and he was fantastic in there.
I forgot about him in Deadwood. Yeah.
The drunk doctor is fantastic in there.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something in that dude's face, something in his eyes. I mean, he's also the perfect foil
for
this
movie.
He
could play a little small doll that would run around and kill you lots.
Yeah. Really? Almost like a little redheaded.
Yeah, a little redhead.
I'm telling you, he was the thing that I liked the most in the film and wanted to see the most of. And I realized he has like the central role, right? He's playing a troubled person, and this is like his wheelhouse, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But man, I was just like this. I knew he wasn't the killer because the movie was telegraphing that freaking hard, and like he just did a great job. He embodies this role.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I honestly kind of thought they were going to go the obvious route and say that it was him in the end. And I thought, well, that'll be real dumb because from minute one, when he first opened the limo door, I went, oh, well, here's your guy. They're going to make seem like the killer.
Here's your murderer. Look at him.
How could you end with this Barbara Streisand song if he was the killer? I don't understand.
Oh, yeah. She was supposed to be in this, by the way. Didn't
she was supposed to be, the main.
Yeah,
that was the whole reason to even move this thing from treatment to anything was because of the idea to put Barbra Streisand in this Laura Mars role. But she wanted to do the song, which was great. I enjoyed her power ballad that was reminding me very much of a James Bond song. Bit, it started out that way. The whole movie seemed like it started out that way.
It just reminds me of my mom and her obsession with her growing up. My mom just thought Barbra Streisand was the end-all, be-all of all time of anything.
And so, everybody's mom.
By the way, I don't want to...
all of our moms.
Yeah. I noticed something that when we watch a movie where the woman is a woman is in the lead, we don't do the thing we always do when a man is in the lead, which is talk about who else could have played the role. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, I would have loved to see Jane Fonda in this role.
Sure, why not? Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. She was kind of in trouble then, though. Wasn't she? Everyone was mad at her then for her little.
No, this was still. This was still. We like Jane Fonda. Wasn't until. Yeah, I mean, she was
she made everybody angry during Vietnam.
Yeah, the
right?
Vietnam thing is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Because she kind of got blacklisted for a bit, and then I don't remember how things turned around, but she was still Hanoi Jane for a lot of the 70s.
Nonetheless, she was making movies at this time. The Electric Horseman was just a year later. You know, she made Fun with Dick and Jane a year before this. Like, it's not, she's just not like, she wasn't blacklisted or anything. And I think it would have been really interesting to see her portraying this sort of like internal terror that Faye Dunaway was fine. It just like, it's fun to think about other people doing it.
Yeah.
I think we ought to stay within the movie and replace and switch Tommy Lee Jones with Faye Dunaway and switch their character and roles. Mm. I'd like to see that movie.
Mm, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. What, Tommy Lee Jones is a photographer or
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. What if Tommy Jones,
a photographer, and Faye Dunaway is the over.
Whoa! That?
There goes that.
That's a soundy Monday. I think his internet just took a poop.
Looking through, I was going back and kind of looking through some other Brad Dourif roles because I know I'd seen him in a whole bunch of other things. The dude does not age. First of all, I mean, he looks pretty close to the same now as he did back in 1978 when this was out. But he was in one of the best X-Files episodes, Beyond the Sea, where he's a death row inmate that can see, predict where, or not predict, he's able to see telepathically where two kidnapped college students are.
Oh.
He's Luther Lee Boggs.
Oh, really?
And I just remember that being one of the best X-Files episodes.
Oh, I have no memory of that. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. So what his deal with Chucky, he really is the voice of Chucky. Has he always been the voice of Chucky? Like since the beginning? Or Dunaway
good question. Him? I don't know.
Hold on. That would be a Dunaway question, and he's out of Discord right now.
I realized I don't care about him doing anything except Grima Wormtongue. Like for me, that is the peak of a career right there.
Mm. It's a pretty good one, but it's also pretty one note. It's just sort of whisper in the king's ear and tell him dumb shit, you know? Like
but the trembling and the long looks and he's amazing.
Yeah, well, I love him. I mean, I think he's great. And I say that in a way that sounds weird, but I really do like him. I could watch him in just about anything, and he's still doing all kinds of stuff. He's in like, oh my gosh, 8 pre-production stuff, filming post-production. Yeah, they're in the middle of filming the Deadwood movie, which I can't freaking wait for. He's in that.
So looking through his list, it looks like the first Child's Play movie doesn't have Chucky speaking, I guess is the...
Well, no, he's actually in the film,
he's not credited in... Okay, I see what you mean. Okay,
he's the actor.
He does... Okay, right, yes. He's... Okay, so yes, Scott, he is in all of the Child's Play movies, like just... movie after movie after
so
movie.
So in those Chucky movies, I can't remember the premise. The premise is that a serial killer's spirit is basically in a doll now or something.
Right. He gets chased by a police officer who is in pursuit of him, and he's in a toy store, and he basically mystically transfers his essence into the doll.
He and a doll touch the same crystal skull at the same time and say, "I wish I was the other person."
Great. And then it explodes. And then the toy store explodes. The toy store explodes. And so at that point in time, some Backstreet people get the toy and they sell the Chucky doll on the black market, and this mom who is on hard times purchases the doll, and then it goes from there.
Okay,
and
then but is he the serial killer that's in the store when it blows up? Is it Brad Dourif?
Yes, he is.
Brad
Dourif
playing the serial killer.
Okay, I need to watch that. I haven't seen Chucky in so long, I don't remember anything about it. We should watch that at some point.
Oh, yeah.
But what a career this guy had. Like, he was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, of course. Mm-hmm. He was in Dune. He was Peter DeVries in Dune.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of appearances on TV shows that I hold in really high regard from like the 80s. Mm-hmm. You know, like he was in Miami Vice, he was in The Equalizer, Law and Order, you know,
He was in the fourth Alien movie.
Yeah, people are which I like a lot more than other people do, but anyway, he's like this, hey, Hollywood, anyone looking for a weirdo with crazy eyes? Here's your guy, because he has got the nuttiest face. He looks like he's about to pop any minute and stab us all in the neck with a pen real hard, you know?
But like most people would like to get a credit. They'd like to get a SAG card. This guy starts off in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and then like 28 years later appears in Return of the King. That's incredible.
Yeah. Pretty good. He's just got a face to him that you can't match. And nobody else looks like that guy.
Really does.
His accent,
he's never
going to
play the romantic lead, but
no.
But he's... You know, he's always going to be. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's a movie I haven't seen where he does play the sympathetic character, and it's more the.
I just don't even know. Like, if you even look at his ancient IMDb photo, I can't even tell what this is from. Let's see. Does it say? Yeah, it's in
One
Ragtime.
Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, right?
This is from Ragtime in '81. His IMDb.
Yeah. Right, profile. Right, yeah.
And if you look at it, he's this nicely dressed dude in a hat in the 20s with a nice bow tie and stuff. He still looks skeevy as hell. He looked like he's about to kill everybody. Like, totally. The guy can't do anything else. He just can't do it.
By the way, speaking of the worst IMDb photo of the movie, I think this is the first one we've ever had a movie where a woman in an IMDb photo is naked from the waist down.
What?
Her name is Anna Anderson.
Okay.
It's unbelievable. I don't think I've ever seen this before. You go to Eyes of Laura Mars, look deep for Anna Anderson. Her IMDb photo has her naked from the waist down.
Anna Anderson.
Wow.
It's in profile, so don't freak out.
Yeah.
It's the 70s, so look out.
I can't find her here. Anna
Anderson.
Oh, yeah, Anderson. There she is. She one of the models, I guess? Or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
She was.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
True. I don't think we've ever had that.
She was only in two movies, Eyes of Laura Mars and something called Portfolio. She played a Ford model. Yeah, I wonder if that's
a character named Ford Model.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
Hi, I'm Ford Model. Yeah, that's a very odd thing. I think that photo might even be from Eyes of Laura Mars, that photo. I don't know.
It might be.
Yeah, because they had that one multiple shot thing where two ladies are laying around and one of them's like missing her bottom. And you can't really tell why. There doesn't seem to be a point to it. It's not, you know, porn exactly. It's just like, all right, well, no. I've lost my pants is kind of what it felt like.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't know where they are.
It's an odd little thing. Here's some fun trivia for you. We talked about Streisand. We talked about Carpenter. The film, here's an important note, though. The film cast includes two Oscar winners, Faye Dunaway, although definitely not for this. And Tommy Lee Jones, also not for this. And Oscar nominee Brad Dourif, or Dourif, or however you say it. What was he nominated for? I bet it was Cuckoo's Nest, wasn't it? Or something.
Yes. Probably, it has to be.
Yeah, he's really prominent in that. this is one of my favorite things, because I do this with the alternate titles on the show. And it's probably because of my upbringing with Mad Magazine. But the Mad Magazine parody of this movie, which was an issue 206 published in 1979... named it Eyes of Lurid Mess.
Oh, yeah.
Is that not the most Mad Magazine name you ever heard in your life? Oh, my gosh.
When I was trying to come up with a porn parody, I was thinking Thighs of Lurid something, but I couldn't figure out the last word.
There you go. No dialogue in the movie until like 6 or 7 minutes in, which kind of bugged me. Mm-hmm. And
it was really quiet at the start. Yeah. I wondered if I was being, if there was a trick being played on me and I was supposed to keep creeping up my volume.
Yeah. Now, the lady in the apartment who got killed, What was her
one with the, well, the two, you mean the two roommates?
No, the one with the
first one, the first lady.
Was she just a random killing or what was
her? No, that was her publisher, right? That was her.
Oh, not the one that cut out of the magazine. I mean the one that was passed by the guy with the dog in the vision.
Oh, Ron Julius' wife?
I never connected that. They were together.
Right.
She was the one that was in the apartment when he was lounging around and being gross.
Right. Okay. And she's the one who set up the show,
Gallery.
Gallery. Yeah.
Okay. So everybody that was killed was somehow related to her in some way. Mm-hmm. Okay. I for some reason, some of those people just felt weirdly
disconnected.
Random. Yeah. Like they were just random victims and not connected to her. But now it makes sense.
Oh, by
I
the
guess.
Way. Yeah. Also, that's exactly how I imagine two models spend their afternoon, buttering, rubbing each other down naked.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's what happens.
That's what you do.
It's the way we always imagined pajama parties, sleepovers, yeah. And always have pillow fights in their underwear. Of course, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what happens.
And they'd always have an answering machine that goes, "Hi, this is Lulu and Michelle. We're not home, so go to hell."
Yeah,
I love it. That was actually my favorite part. Please tell me you captured that.
I don't know if I did. I might have. I don't know. We might have. I'll check. It annoyed me. I didn't like it, so I may not have recorded it.
I love the. The funeral, by the way, the eulogy at their funeral, their dual funeral.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. That was hilarious.
Where the eulogist even goes into the dictionary defines model as.
That was the most insulting eulogy ever.
It totally was. First off, you don't even get your own funeral. Second, the eulogist is going to do the dictionary defines death as not being alive.
You get this 2-for-1 deal at the freaking mortuary. Right. It's really weird that bit, but yeah. I have, so small.
We'll put them in the same.
Yeah,
casket.
Maybe they're in the same casket. I have to tell you guys a story, and you guys tell me if you think this is nuts because I think it is. But I had a teacher in high school who was an art teacher, and she claimed basically the premise of the film. She says, or she used to tell us in class that creative people, whether they're artists or whatever, would output stuff. She believed that the work you would output as an artist was stuff you would feel happening somewhere else. Not necessarily murders, but the way that she, her photos match the murder scene photos so perfectly or whatever. This artist used to tell us that if you painted a guy falling off a building as an example, there's somewhere, someplace, some guy is actually falling off that exact building.
So some kind of clairvoyant muse of some sort.
She believed this, and she would tell her in high school that she in our class she would tell us advanced painting 2 was the class, and she would get up and tell all of this stuff, and it seemed like it's horse shit, but I still to this day can't believe
you don't know it's horse shit.
Actually, somewhere out there Mario's running around naked.
I completely agree with it though. I grew up playing the piano and being taught classical and then jazz piano, and a lot of people who sit and talk about the emotion of your music is something that the audience is either going to connect with or they aren't.
Yeah.
And you can't invent something new. There's nothing new under the sun. So your job is to connect them with something that is real and familiar that they might actually imagine, feeling. And I think that is pretty applicable to all of art.
I agree. Like that level of it, totally agree. She was literally saying that if I drew a guy jumping off a building, somewhere a guy was jumping off a building, like I would cause it.
Now, did she? She dreamed to cause it.
Causing it, or the thing was causing me to draw it. Like she had this. She
sure
believed
you
in
sensed
this
it somewhere.
Yeah, she thought full. She was full on Laura Mars in her eyes in this thing.
Right.
Like
that's
so what
she went
thinking.
To her house. She probably
fruit,
had.
By the way.
I'm doing a still life of fruit somewhere, someplace. Yeah. Somebody's eating some bad plastic fruit. But yeah, like she was all crazy about it. Because I, up to a point, I'm totally in agreement. Like that is how you connect with your viewers, listeners, watchers, readers, whatever. But she was like so literal about it. It used to freak us out. And she had a lot of other weird ideas, most of which I've forgotten. But I remember there were days in class where you're just like, what the frick is she talking about?
Just remember, Scott, it's only a weird idea until it's true.
Yeah, I guess so.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I don't have a gross moment in this movie.
What?
Yeah, I don't really. It's all just kind of gross. I mean, and by gross, I just mean generally it's just all so 70s. It's just pasted in the 70s.
There is a very weird unease that comes from watching a movie that's this 70s. I don't know what it is, but it just feels like.
A lot of it's intentional. I mean, of course, there's some unintentional things just because every child growing up always looked at, you know, their grandparents' homes and went, what is this weird smell? And you'll always hate that cologne smell or whatever they had in there. But I will say this, the part that grows to me out was a bit of dialogue that created a smell in my nose that I just did not want there. And it was when the cops were in Tommy's apartment and they're digging through all this, you know, this porn that he has hung up and is, you know, he's celebrating all this filth. One of the guys says, it smells like a gorilla cage in here. Mm. And for some reason, I could just smell that apartment for some reason. It just smelled like sweat and poo and just, ah.
So was that Dorf's apartment or was his apartment, right?
That was his apartment. Yeah, Tommy's apartment.
Well, was it Tommy Lee's apartment? Because the other guy came.
No. That was also confusing too. No. The character who played Tommy, the limo driver,
that Tommy. Yeah, okay, sorry.
The limo driver. And so, which by the way also was fun because I was trying to imagine when they were filming and the director had to tell Tommy Lee Jones, I need you to run down New York full speed screaming, Tommy, good luck.
Yeah, how fun is that?
Yelling your own name.
Yeah.
Tommy!
Yeah. Hey, you're not related to Faye Dunaway at all, are you? Have you checked that out?
Not to my knowledge, not close enoughly related that I would get any residual income. How's okay. that?
That's right. Weird. I'm totally related to my cousin Michael.
Oh, right? Check that out.
Michael B. Just Michael?
Michael B. Jordan. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I may be related to both of them. Now that you
mention it. That's right. The B is the only difference between those guys.
It smells like a gorilla cage in here.
I know, nasty. It is. Okay, I'll give you that one. That was pretty gross.
I'll tell you. I don't know if you guys noticed or really were paying attention, but there was so much off-screen dialogue in this movie that was just so absurd. I mean, just constantly
lots of
all
weird
this
little
weird
comments,
extra kind of stuff. Like,
You know, background conversations. Usually in lots of movies, they'll have background conversations and they will, you know, direct the extras to keep it at a certain level. This sounded like they added in conversation post in a soundstage. And so everything was very clear, even though it was off screen, and it was just very off putting to me.
Well, the Gene Shalit looking guy, that was kind of him. The Gene Shalit guy would always say something stupid off scene.
Right, right.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead, Randy. What you didn't like the?
I didn't like the sound transfer. It's Amazon Prime. Who knows what it is, but I was really, really frustrated by.
Well, the original may have sucked. It may have just been bad from the top down.
I think it's just bad.
Yeah. The '70s. I remember as a kid, very young, in this era, that theaters weren't even stereo half the time. They were like a big mono speaker somewhere, and you know they didn't care.
And they're filming a lot of this stuff, you know, in locations where it's very noisy, and so everything has to be done, on a soundstage afterwards. And it just there wasn't a real good leveling of that audio.
They hadn't figured out how to do post really well.
Right.
Or at least this guy didn't figure out.
Right. This guy didn't.
Now that I think about it, the grossest thing I'm thinking about right now is Gene Shalit's mustache. I'm going to stop thinking about him. Yeah. You know that thing.
How much popcorn butter do you think is in Gene Shalit's mustache?
All of it.
Perpetually.
Like you could wring it out over a... large.
It's like an outdoor waterfall treatment. It's just constantly regurgitating itself. It's the same butter just going rotating through.
Right.
Oh, that's disgusting. Anyway, I don't know how to feel about it. I did notice that the weapon of choice here seemed like the weapon of choice for all 70s thrillers. Ice picks. Always an ice pick. Yep.
Yeah, right.
Ice picks. For whatever reason growing up, I felt like every drama had an ice pick in it. And I don't know why.
It's a very quick murder weapon. It was Tommy Lee Jones in the back room with an ice pick. It was stabbing in the eye. Such a quick, just right into the eye.
Ugh.
also, right into the brain, you're dead.
Also, apparently, this was just right before a turning point for ice machine technology. Right.
Yeah, totally, apparently, dude.
Right.
People were still using ice picks. Yeah. I don't even know, like, I like what, maybe just someone figured out how to machine ice cubes way better
in 1980. So. I mean, was there a time that you'd have a big block of ice delivered to your house? And then,
yes, there was a time
to fix yourself an old fashioned.
Yep.
Right.
Just, that's, like, how you did it.
Only back then it was just called a fashioned, Brian.
Yeah, it wasn't
just a fashion. It was a new fashion then. But yeah, no, they would bring, my grandma would describe this, bring a big block of ice. She had a service that would bring it, and she would put that in a freezer. So it would keep, but to get ice out of it, she had to go down there and ice pick it. And I think today,
the ice man cometh.
Unless you do something with it, like a period piece or something, if you had an ice pick today, I don't know how many people would even know what the hell that is.
I've wielded a ice pick for a few seasons myself. I did some furniture reupholstery, and one of the ways that we got the staples out was an ice pick. And I used to envision stabbing people in the eye with it.
Do you ever go?
Well, that's not weird at all.
No, that's normal.
Oh, is that not normal?
No, that's totally normal. Don't worry about it. Have you got anybody here besides me gone ice blocking? You ever done that? Where you get on a big old ice block?
Wait, the total quiet in the room tells you
is
that.
This like the, is this like the beginning of?
Yeah.
Is this like the beginning of Frozen, where you go cut ice?
Oh, maybe. Well, okay. So I can't remember how Frozen begins, but. It's like, so what you do is you go down to Walmart. Walmart has two kinds of ice you can buy. You can buy the big giant blocks. Those are usually used to just, you know, line the inside of areas to keep things cool.
You're building an igloo.
Yeah, or whatever. Or you can buy the the cubes. What we would do, and we did this just a couple winters ago again, but as a kid I did it all the time too. But you go buy ice blocks, take it to, a hill where people are sledding and stuff, and then you put a towel on the block, which will immediately kind of stick to it because of the way ice kind of behaves. Mm-hmm. And then you sit on that towel so that you're not right on the block. And then you ride that thing like a cart down the hill. And it's fan-freaking-tastic. I can't believe nobody else has done this.
This Southern boy has never seen Walmart sell a block of ice.
They I don't definitely
even,
do.
I didn't even know they don't this make was it to the parking thing. Lot in South Carolina.
Because I grew up in Texas, and we would buy block ice to go camping all the time. You put two big blocks of ice in one of your ice chests, and then you're able to keep everything cold.
All of our ice is cubed. Yeah. Everything we have is cubed.
Well, and maybe, I mean, I don't know if this is the reason why we have a bunch of it here, because if you go here, they have entire machines dedicated to just the blocks, but maybe people are buying them to go sledding down a hill. I don't know, but it's really fun and probably horribly dangerous. We just never really thought about it that way.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like, at least with a sled or a toboggan, the front of it has a lip up so that if there's a rock or something, it's not going to stop you dead in your tracks and make your face go into the ground.
Well,
whereas if you're on a block of ice, if that thing hits a pebble that's lodged well into the ground, you're stuck.
It's
like the end of your trip.
I mean, I will admit the best combination of factors are the perfect kind of weather, which is not entirely freezing frozen weather, but a little bit wet snow, and you can create this, like, and it actually helps to have other people on tubes and stuff because they're patting it down and creating a slick surface anyway. But never had that happen, and you're not wrong. It's a block, you know. It shouldn't.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a good idea, and it should nosedive.
Not aerodynamic at all either. No. Plus, I don't know why I'm visualizing Bazooka Joe taking a couple of ice blocks and belting them to his feet. And what are you doing, Bazooka Joe? I'm going ice skating.
Yeah. Somebody may have done that for all I know, too. But it's really fun and exhilarating, I have to admit. I used to put my kids on my lap and fly down that hill in there, and no one ever got hurt.
Wow, there is no place near me that sells ice by the block unless I go up the road quite a ways and go to places that specialize, such as Twice the Ice, Holiday Ice, and Ice Occasions North Carolina. So
hold on a second. What was the first one?
Twice the Ice.
Twice the Ice. Nice. I love that name. You should go up there and just tell us what it's like at Twice the Ice. And is it, I'm sure they give you all kinds of ice formats, not just blocked, right?
Right.
They probably
cubes and triangles and
dry. You probably get dry ice there if you need it.
Dry ice.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Twice the dry ice.
That's not ice you should be messing with. Dry ice is a different thing altogether.
Yeah. But I don't know. So, it's now that it's the season again, maybe I'll do it again and film it this time or something.
I'll bet you there's a statistic and you go back in time and deaths from dry ice is an actual number like 30 years ago.
Oh, probably. That stuff was crazy, especially if you, I guess, what was the deal if you left dry ice out in the open in a certain
right.
kind
it,
of...
Right, enough of it could fill your house with so much you know carbon... non-oxygen that you would asphyxiate.
Yeah, that's what it was. And it's kind of wow. a silent killer because you can't really tell. And yeah, I think there probably are statistics about that. People die that's from crazy. Dumb stuff all the time. They're yeah. probably people...
Also, don't fart too much in an elevator. I mean, these are all things that are true.
That also reduces the amount of oxygen in the elevator.
Yeah, that's true.
I decided I wanted to really quickly see if there were like a list of movies where the ice pick was used as the murder weapon.
Yeah,
I right. didn't find that, but I did find a 2012 article from the New York Times about how the ice pick is coming back in style as a murder weapon.
Oh.
Oh, nice.
Like an actual murder weapon?
Yeah. Like there's a photo of a guy pointing to a scar in his arm saying, Man Rosa of the Bronx recently showed off the scars from an ice pick attack 2 years ago. Quote, the ice pick, from what I know, is the new thing, he said.
Wow. Basic Instinct had an ice pick, didn't it? Do I remember that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, Basic Instinct. That's the one of the ones I'm thinking of. Is the
Angel Heart, Mickey Rourke, you know, uses an ice pick to jab some ice a bunch before he stabs somebody in the eye.
Is that the game? The movie with the Cosby Kid with a gun on her hooter? Is
yes,
that the one?
Okay. That's the one.
All right,
yeah.
Just making sure I remember the right one there. Film School Rejects has a whole list of these. Oh no, you know what it is? It's just the most mundane weapons: lawnmowers. Death by Phallic Art and Clockwork Orange, Death by Hockey Skate and Halloween H2O. Oh yeah, I remember that. Death by Garage Door Scream,
or Death by Chocolate down at the Cheesecake Factory.
Death by Toilet and Boondock Saints. That was pretty good.
See, it doesn't feel like it's as out there as some of those. Like a lawnmower, you wouldn't say, oh, yeah, lawnmower, man. Great for lawns, but boy, is that a murder weapon. At least you look at an ice pick and say, man, that's a murder weapon. Oh, but I guess you could also use it to break a chunk of ice off a block.
Yeah.
And for some reason, an ice pick is going into the face. I don't know why, but we pick up an ice pick and it goes toward the face.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It always does. Right toward the eye in this case. By the way, I forgot that. One of my least favorite deaths in a movie was by bowling pin. And that was in There Will Be Blood. You guys remember that? You will drink your milkshake and then you beat him with a bowling pin. Yep.
Right.
That worked out great.
Kills that last guy with it. Yeah.
That guy. He deserved it. He deserved it. His character, I mean. I'm not, you know.
His character deserved it. He was a dick.
Not advocating murder.
No. Of course not.
No. Nobody wanted to do that. All right, we're going to do some clippage. How's that sound? Okay. Is everybody ready for
Sounds
that?
Sounds great.
Here's one. Here's a clip for you. Hold on. Nope. There it is. I'm not sure I follow what this person means, so here, I'll play it, and you guys can help me out. Here you go.
So here it comes, right back at you. And we'll use murder to sell deodorant so that you'll just get bored with murder. Right?
I don't get it.
Yeah, she's explaining why this combination of sex and violence is so popular with Faye Dunaway's photos, I guess.
Oh, all right. Well,
and she's also trying to excuse it. She's coming up with this ridiculous notion that if you popularize this thing that people don't like, that they will become used to it, and then that will become something that they're not as like mystified or freaked out about. So like we have a crime wave, right? So let's show crime, and then people will be like, oh, crime's boring. I'm not going to do any more crimes.
Yeah, good point. Selling deodorant's just a weird thing to throw in there, but whatever.
Hey, boy, if Old Spice had a naked lady with a gun, boy, I'd be buying Old Spice left and right. That would be the...
Is that the ad? I think that's the one we do that.
So, yeah.
They usually whistle it, I guess. Right. Here's Tommy Lee Jones. There's Tommy Lee Jones being very young. Here you go.
Yes, I think it's really tragic that this is the kind of junk that's passing for art these days.
Yeah, no country for young men. Is what
but
I
looking
have gone
at this stuff makes me want to kill somebody or a bunch of people around somebody.
You got $50? It always reminds me of that voice.
I know. It's kind of my Ernest Borgnine.
Here's 70s sounding lady yelling a swear word. It's pretty good. Here you go.
Oh, shit.
It's It's pretty good.
It's great. That's yeah.
Oh, really, shit.
I'm going to use that again later, I think. Here's that guy that looks like Gene Shalit saying a thing.
Don't give me an ulcer.
Don't give me an ulcer. Hey, what happened to Dunaway? He's not in our room anymore.
Oh.
He disappeared.
We'll find Dunaway.
I thought he was quiet. Well, Faye Dunaway.
He's seen the movie, so you can keep doing clips. Yeah. He knows what they are.
Yeah, he knows what's up here. All right, here's a horrible sound, and whenever it would happen, she'd have a vision. Here you go. Actually, decently effective.
Yeah.
What you can't hear is the, because it's a visual, is the ridiculous zoom into the face that became like a trope for telenovelas.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, this movie is filled with that ridiculous zoom, and it, like, it gets tiresome. I'm like, am I watching telenovelas?
No, it was the 70s here? Man, it was the time for quick zooms and ladies not wearing pants on their IMDb photos. That was what we
it's something that Quentin Tarantino used really well with Kill Bill, that
yeah, he loves doing that.
He totally does.
And you can always, and when you see him doing it, you're like, oh, you're just you love 70s movies, so here you are doing this. Yeah,
saw that done, and you're going to do it. By the way, we didn't even talk about the fact that for Faye Dunaway, when she has these visions and she says that's the only thing that she can see, right? And she just freezes, like, it's like I'm seeing through this camera lens and I don't see the things that are right in front of me. Mm. Do we like the fact that she just continued to drive the car?
No, I don't. In fact, no, it bugged me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wrote it down even. It's like, what the H is this about? Like, if you can't see what's in front of you,
it's time to pull over so you're not the murderer.
Yeah, I don't buy it is what I'm saying. I don't think that they didn't explain how that worked very well.
Well, they had to have her driving a car, right? Because they were trying to rule in Tommy, right? As the killer still, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it just, oh,
I know. Man,
there were a lot of scenes outside in the streets and stuff where I was way too busy looking at background and extras and this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like I had a hard time with those scenes because I guess filming used to be a lot more controlled. Like, mm-hmm. They would block off a whole city street and everybody out there was like an actor who was trying to look normal, but they weren't normal, you know?
Yeah, and they did that in this, with that scene with the burning cars and stuff and the models fighting, pulling each other's hair. There's something in the trivia about how that took 5 days or something and they had to have this whole cordoned off area. Like, I don't know how you get away with that in New York. Mm. Just don't get it. Like, I understand... Well, whatever. Movies are movies. And
there's a scene right after that where she's riding in a cab and gets into a traffic jam. She has to get out and walk. Mm-hmm. And that scene, when the camera pulls back and you watch her crossing the street and walking down the sidewalk, everything looks just so. And it's like, it feels like a soundstage.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. It just bugged me. Like, I don't know. I don't know what you're supposed to do, but it didn't feel normal.
A lot of weird echo, too, in some of those scenes. That I noticed. Mm-hmm. Here's a cranky taxi guy. Everyone loves a cranky taxi guy. So here's ours today.
Look, I have an appointment. I'll get out here.
Me, I got nothing to do, right, lady? I just sit here all day, huh?
Yeah, hey, what do you think of that?
That's the scene. That's the scene I was just describing.
Yeah, that's true. It's bad.
Yeah, and it's fun. You know, it's funny. It's like, well, but if we were still continuing on our drive, you'd still be stuck here. So what does it matter? I'm going to get out and walk.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, exactly. Because he would get paid more. She's going to stop and pay him, and so he's not going to get as much as he would have if she'd stayed.
Right.
In the car.
Unlike
we can get a fare sooner. I don't know.
We're spoiled with Uber and Lyft with like the way that it's just like your rate's done. You paid for it before the guy got there. You're not going to pay more, you know, and you may get a discount because he took too long. You know, like it's so different now. Also,
a discount.
Oh, hi, Brian Dunaway. Hi.
You need a discount on computer equipment.
Yeah.
No, I need a discount on Discord because finally I was just like, forget it. And I restarted and Discord did an update. So because my connection was fantastic. I was getting like 5 meg up and 40 meg down. And I'm like, why am I Skyping? It makes no sense at all. Yeah. Apparently it was a Discord update that needed to be performed.
Oh, lame. Well,
I feel like I'm sounding a lot better now.
You do sound better.
You do. You sound great.
Yeah. You sound real Discord. Good. Well, you're right in time for Rene Aubergenois to yell the name Bert. So I'm going to play that for you. Here it is.
Bert.
That's it. just said Bert.
he said Bert a lot, and I kept trying to figure out, because Bert was also a producer, so I guess he was one of the money men, and he was always talking to Otto. And were they supposed to be a thing? I never could quite.
Do you mean Odo? You say Otto?
Odo. I'm sorry. Did I say Otto? Yeah, Odo. Odo is what I meant.
I don't know if they were trying to imply that or not, but he was just such a backgroundy weird.
Bert. He was always giving him that coy Bert. Bert.
Bert.
Like they had like
Bert.
Some kind of
right.
relationship.
Bert.
Bert.
It sounds like Ernie.
Bert.
No, it sounds like Bert. Ernie. If Ernie and Bert's names were swapped, this would be. Who is currently Bert saying Ernie, but now it's Bert.
Bert.
Because he was always irritated Ernie. With Ernie.
Yeah. Bert.
Ernie. Bert.
Bert.
Here's Odo.
Benson.
I wrote, Odo is nutty in this, and here's some dialogue.
Frankly, I don't do Rona Barrett. How'd you like to see my Bob Walters? Hey, I do a terrific Lloyd Bridges.
He actually does. That face he made was pretty funny.
He does a terrible Lloyd Bridges.
That face he made was great.
That scene was in a police department where a bunch of different people are being interrogated about the murder. And it's like, it was so disjointed and unnecessary that I hated it. I was mad at the movie. Like, why are you doing this?
I hated it. Yeah,
it's a little 70s kind of thing. Also, just everyone sitting next to hookers. That's so 70s. Like, there's always three or four hookers sitting around and everyone's uncomfortable because they feel like now they look like hookers. That's like the oldest stupid thing in the book in that era. Here's Raul Julia hamming it up.
If your buddy was a photographer and she gave you a giant framed photo of you with one of the worst expressions on your face at your party, would you hang that thing up?
No.
Oh yeah.
Would you say, wow, you really wasted a lot of money having that thing printed really large and then having it framed and this is going to basically go in the behind the couch?
I'd say, this is great. And then I'd put it to the side and then later I would get rid of it.
You would find that anything that you give me, I will hang up.
Really?
Here's a nice picture of somebody's vagina. I'll just put that right on your wall.
Well, of course you will. What if I give you like a Mapplethorpe wiener wrapped in leather or whatever that guy used to do with his photos? What if I give you that? What if you had a wiener man on your wall? Would you do that?
Oh, yeah. Why not?
All right. Just don't put it on the stream.
You know, it's just a wall. I mean...
It's just a wall, guys.
It's just a wall.
No one's gonna be offended if there's an ugly penis on, it's just a wall with an ugly penis.
It's my wall. If you don't like the wall, stop looking.
Yeah, get out of my room. Exactly.
Right.
All right, here's Raul Julia hamming it up.
Don't look at me like that. I did not kill Elaine.
What reason would I have to kill her? She was the best meal ticket I ever had.
Second best. I was the best.
I was the best. Best.
And there goes more of that audio question.
It's like they're talking in the middle of a or in the very front of a movie theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a great comparison. I mean, I was gonna say that's like a bathroom. It's like whatever, but that's actually more like it's just poor acoustics.
Yeah,
it's just not really good. Is. And there's a bunch of times in the movie where they do that, but whatever. 78. So I don't know what this is.
I was your husband. I was never your friend.
Oh yeah. He was starting
that's
to
very droll. Wow, what a delivered line.
What a romantic thing to say to a woman.
Yeah, I'll bet that's she just... really appreciated it, you know? What a sweetheart he is. He also says this.
You deliberately provoke me.
Jeez.
That's a keeper.
Yeah.
That's what he used later on.
Yeah, I can use that all the time.
Does every one of these lines of dialogue sound like it was recorded at like the batting cages?
It kind of does.
You deliberately provoke me.
The batting cages. That's a good comparison too. Yeah. Oh, that's such a funny one, dude, because it's I know what you're saying. Like I can totally
inside
relate to that.
Inside a racquetball court.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, there's something.
You deliberately provoke me.
God,
that's really great. All right, here's oh my gosh, I'm lost now. Okay, here's another where he says a dumb thing. I played this at the top of the show too.
Oh, but you, instant star of the world of chic.
That was a word people liked back then.
And it seems like he didn't get many lines in the film. I think you captured all of them.
Yeah, I may have. Yeah. He didn't really talk much. So when he did. I don't know what this one is.
You're playing with the big boys now.
Oh.
Big boys.
Big boys.
Yeah. I like when he mounts it to him when he kicks him out of the apartment or kicks him out of the cab. Big boys.
Yeah. their fight in the cab was pretty funny just because there was no, You couldn't hear what they were saying, but you could tell they were really yelling in there. That must have been a fun scene right. to do.
What was that?
I don't know.
Yeah, Dunaway's, what are we hearing
there? That would be me. Hold on a second.
Okay. His phone or something.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Wait. Dunaway's going to take a call.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to mute it. Hold on a second.
All right. We're going to hold on a second.
Still trying. Muting takes a while.
To mute.
Yep, he just muted himself altogether. On we go.
Oh, yeah. He took out. He left. He got out of the thing.
He hung up.
What the heck is going on? All right.
What if this is? What if Brian Dunaway is like playing a murder mystery with us right now?
Oh no,
that would be really funny.
I don't want that in my life.
The ears of Brian Dunaway.
There it is. All right. Final. Or no. A couple more clips. Here's a angry acting clip. I like this one.
Don't walk away from me. Don't walk away from me. You admitted you're the murderer. Because of you, she's dead. You're gonna pay for this. You're gonna pay for this. Oh,
wow.
He's so
just
good.
That last bit. You're gonna pay for this.
At the end.
The so best
good.
Part.
So good.
How can anyone blame her when, you know, when she's seeing the things as they're happening across town? She can't do anything about it. They're not dead because of her.
No. I mean, I would have actually, if it were me, and then I guess Tommy Lee Jones being in charge of the case didn't, you know, he wasn't gonna do this, but you would actually do is look at her as a possible suspect, because if she's that accurate with the painting or with the photograph and it's exactly like the scene, you know, you at least have to treat her like a possible person of interest. And they never did that. They were always like, oh, no, it's not her. Clearly, she didn't do it.
So they did it for just like half a second.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, bring her back here. Get her back here. We need to talk some more to this girl. Then they just thought she was crazy. Yeah. Nah, she's crazy.
Let's play that little
Where tenor. Were you? A couple blocks away? Oh, okay. That rules you out forever.
Yeah.
Right.
You saying that is enough.
All right. Now, here's one of my favorite clips, because this is Faye Dunaway totally hamming up her line, and then Tommy Lee Jones not having any ham at all. Okay. So you'll know when you hear it. So here you go.
What is going on?
I don't know.
I don't know. What do you want from me?
I just love the contrast.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know.
He sounds like he's in another scene where he's just been asked which kind of sandwich he wants for lunch.
Yeah, what do you guys want? What are we going to get for lunch?
I don't know.
Who pooped on the toilet and forgot to flush it?
I don't know.
Like, he could use that for anything.
Has any movie ever been summed up better in a 2-second clip?
I didn't kill her.
I don't know.
I don't care.
Is this a country for old men?
I don't know.
All right, great. Let's go here now. It's the Film Sack Checklist. Everyone died in the 70s movies from Ice Picks. Check. All the wool and polyester in the world. Check.
Ooh, yeah.
Brad Dourif should be in everything always. Check. Star Trek connections. We have a few here. The obvious one is Rene Aubergenois, who played Donald Phelps in this in DS9. He was Security Chief Odo. He was also directed a bunch of episodes of DS9 and was a shapeshifter. Star Trek VI, Undiscovered Country. He played Colonel West in the Star Trek, Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. You wrote this twice. But his scenes were cut from the theatrical release. No, that's not true. I've seen him in it. He's in it. Daryl's wrong on this.
The theatrical release. Now, did you see this on a DVD?
No, I don't.
Or
I saw it in both theaters and at home, and it's the exact same version. I have the original theatrical release, and Odo is absolutely in it. His lines may have been cut because he doesn't say anything, but he's in it. He's all up in it. And he ends up turncoating with the Klingons.
Right. Does he have the most unfeature rich face? Is that why they picked him for that character? Because that is like
Because I think he does have a feature rich face. Mm-hmm. His choice for Odo was always an odd one for me. I think they just picked it because of his characterization, and you can put that makeup on anyone, you know.
Yeah, it was good. Probably a good face for prosthetics.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's probably
he has a very expressive face
for prosthetics.
Yeah. Yeah. He was very good as Odo. Odo was one of the most memorable Star Trek characters ever, without question. On Enterprise, he was also on Urzel. He was Urzel in the episode Oasis, so he did some Enterprise stuff as well. Nicholas Guest was the party guest. In Wrath of Khan, he appeared as a Starfleet cadet. And Brad Dourif, who played Tommy Ludlow in Voyager, played a psychopathic Betazoid crewman, Lon Suter, in 3 episodes. I remember those.
Yep. And that was season two, and he was a pretty big part of the season two finale and the season three first episode of Voyager.
Oh.
Real cool little role for him.
Yeah, it's not bad. Soundtrack great. I give it an A for adequate. I think there's parts that it worked fine, especially like the scary bits. That stuff was fine. But unremarkable otherwise. There wasn't really much going on there. Yeah. Twitter post, this is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less, if you please. Let's begin with Randy.
I'm sorry, I have to. Eyes of Laura Mars. Leisure suits, strikingly bold makeup, cars on fire, a guy in drag, Barbara Streisand music, lots of nudity, photographers hooking up with cops, women screaming, a designated driver who's been in prison, just like a Saturday night at Ibbot's house.
Yes! I don't think you should ever stop doing those. I think I love them.
No.
And I don't always expect them, even though I should. Either. I should expect them every time, and I don't. Like, that surprised me right at the end. Well done. Brian Dunaway, it's your turn.
Oh, Eyes of Laura Mars. Raul Julia just eats up the screen, then makes love to it passionately, then leaves for 50, no, 100 bucks. It smells like a gorilla cage in here.
Wow, that 50, no, 100 bucks little scene, right. Man.
Yeah.
I knew he was going to attack her, and I was surprised he did.
Yeah, it felt like it. Mm-hmm. But I think he was, like you said, he's bad at assault. He's not good. He's not a good assaulter. And that's fine with me, because I don't like assault.
I'm working my way up to it, Morticia.
Yeah, Morticia. Hey, what's the deal with the 50 bucks then would have been worth what now? Do we know what that
50
would be?
Bucks, same thing.
Let's see.
78. Hold on.
1978.
We need to always have the inflation calculator on screen for this movie.
How much are you asking how much it would take to get Raul Julia to leave the room now compared to 1978?
50 bucks, 78 to 2018 is
75 bucks.
No, it's more. It's 193.93. So $193.93 is what he would have been asked.
So the 100 she holds up is worth, now it's worth 388.
Yeah. So that's significant.
I'd leave the room for that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I'll leave this room for that.
Yeah, it's almost almost 400 bucks. Oh, this is 400 bucks for 100. Oh, yeah, that's what you said, roughly.
Yeah, you said math.
He did say math. Anyway, that's always interesting to me for no good reason. That I can explain. With us, or not with us. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
The Eyes of Laura Mars. This movie is so 70s it should get discounted breakfast at Denny's. Oh, wait. I've got a second one. It's just been handed me by Faye Dunaway herself.
Okay.
La La Land.
Ah, I like
it. Nice.
Like it a lot. It was very good. Oh, that was the wrong thing. Gosh, I had to move that thing. All right. Hey, it's the alternate titles just handed to me. This is strange. Both of them sound very familiar to the original title, but it was almost called The Thighs of Planet Mars, which really just rhymes. It's a bad title. Or The Highs of The Highs of Driving Cars. Oh, if you're a big car
originally, guy. Originally, this was going to be named Eyes.
Yeah.
Just Eyes.
Yeah, just Eyes. That's right. It's a dumb
idea. And apparently the word the got added on later, because if you watch the title card of the film, it's not the Eyes. It's just Eyes.
Oh,
yeah,
Eyes
I always
of Laura
say
Mars.
The, but it is just Eyes of Laura Mars.
And it's the on a bunch of the, like the IMDb, I think, is the, isn't it?
Hold on. No, it's not. You think it is, though, but I always think it is the, but it's not. There's no the in there.
You're right. There's not. It's strictly Eyes of, okay, well, whatever. You don't need a the, I guess, is the deal. All right, well, now that I've lost my place, where the hell was I? Let's do an email. This is where we get our emails, filmsack@gmail.com. That's the place. You can just send those anytime. We'd be happy to read them. Here on the show, like this one from Jeff Lichty, or Lichty. Not sure how you say that last name. It's very German. It says, hello, Sackers. Just something I thought of while listening to 16 Candles and heard about Molly Ringwald in Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone. It is currently streaming on Amazon Prime. I remember enjoying this when I was younger, but I was shocked at my lack of childhood taste when I recently rewatched it again. Love the show. I think that's his way of saying we probably should do that on the show.
This is absolutely one we're adding to the list because not only have you got Molly Ringwald in this thing, you've got Michael Ironsides, who is, you know, feels like he's in everything by not Ridley Scott.
Oh, but, the other guy. The guy that made Starship Troopers and
Verhoeven.
Paul Verhoeven, yeah.
Paul Verhoeven, exactly. This feels like a Paul Verhoeven movie before Paul Verhoeven was a thing.
Yeah. They're making a new Splinter Cell, and he's coming back to be the voice of Sam Fisher again, which is very exciting. Mm. Everybody loves that guy in those Sam Fisher games. But anyway, yeah, I put it on the list.
Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone.
Yeah, put that on there. Let's make that.
It was originally done in 3D. Sadly, I don't think the Netflix or Amazon or wherever it's available has it in 3D, but you know.
Yeah. Voodoo is actually really up their 3D market recently, so you're seeing a lot of movies popping up there.
Jeez, I wonder if I'll ever use 3D anywhere ever. Nope.
I use it all the time, Scott, with my 3D projector and my 3D glasses.
Why? Why do you want to? What's the point? What do you get
because
out of that?
Because if done correctly, it is a very immersive experience. Unfortunately, not enough people do it correctly.
I find it so distracting that it occupies my brain the whole time I'm trying to watch the movie, and I miss everything about the movie because I'm thinking about the 3D all the time.
The only times I'm really, you know, I'm totally cool with it is if I'm seeing a Pixar movie or an animated film. I'm totally fine with seeing 3D with that. But if it's live action, it's just so distracting.
Animation is really easy to do in 3D. You just add a camera into the mix, and it's easy to add that. Whereas live action, you literally have to have two cameras, or you do the post-production thing, which is not nearly as satisfying.
Post-production is like garbage.
Just killed that Clash of the Titans remake a few years ago. That was the worst 3D I've ever seen.
3D done correctly, I think, is a next level of immersion that works for me. Done poorly, don't even bother.
I'd easily consider seeing the new Spider-Man.
In Spider-Verse, into the Spider-Verse.
In the Spider-Verse in 3D. I think because that it feels like it's already a 3D movie with the whole kind of 2D sort of animation. And I don't know. It just feels like that one would lend itself perfectly to a 3D.
That thing is getting the most screaming reviews right now. People are so excited about this thing. And everything I'm reading is really, I'm stoked. I can't wait.
Yeah, the New York Film Critics are calling it the best animated film of 2018 in a year where we got The Incredibles 2 and Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Yeah, they also said it's the best superhero movie of the year in a year that we got Infinity War and freaking Black Panther.
I just want to say, guys, I need you to hold judgment until we've all had a chance to see Bumblebee, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'm going to like Bumblebee, and I don't know why.
I agree. That's because they go back to the heart of it, and so it's less of the Michael Bay-ish things we've seen of recent years.
It's also not Michael Bay.
Right.
It's in the same universe, but it's not, you know, him doing it, which is helpful, I think.
And the retro design styles of the Transformer really.
Yeah. Really so Optimus Prime apparently makes an appearance, and his new model is reminiscent of the Michael Bay one, but not all thousand little doohickeys hanging off of him. He looks like more like the old animated stylized one. It's cool.
Right.
I actually am excited. I don't know why, I just am. I shouldn't be. I wanted to be surprising.
Gina's very excited for it. I don't know if I am here.
I know you're not. And this will be fun to see, right? Because it has no right to... It shouldn't be good.
Right.
I think it should.
More of a right to be good than the Michael Bay thing. So, I mean, as you get further and further into that series...
Right. Yeah, I agree.
I think this has more potential to be good compared to those.
And
he's
a Beetle again, which is what it should have been in the first place. He was never supposed to be a freaking Chevy Cavalier or whatever the hell it was. Not Cavalier.
I wasn't a Cavalier. Camaro. I was okay with that reinterpretation.
I want him to be a bug. Yeah. He was always a bug. He should be a bug. They literally call
him
Bumblebee.
What do you want? You want Jazz to be there as well?
Yes.
It's really humorous, though. It's really humorous that he's only gotten back to being a Beetle after Volkswagen like just destroyed their reputation as a business. Like,
yeah, that's true. Although that's they have that electric bus coming out in 2020, and it looks awesome. I really want it. And they're really cheap right now, by the way. If you want to get like a really good Volkswagen for way cheap, do it, because they're still licking their wounds from their freaking EPA mess. You can get a screaming deal on like a nice Volkswagen right now. Anyway.
Will Jazz, Scatman, Crothers return in the new Transformers? I wonder. Will they?
He wasn't in the original, was he? cartoon?
Yeah, absolutely. He was jazz. You don't remember that?
That was Scatman Carruthers.
He was Optimus Prime's right-hand man.
I didn't have a problem with any of that stuff. I like the cartoon a lot. In fact, you know what we need to do for Film Sack? It's actually good and would be a fun animated thing, is the original animated film.
Yes.
Transformers animated film with
spoilers,
Spock in
where
it.
You've got the power. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where everybody dies.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
It's a cool movie. Like,
I have the DVD if we want to tackle it.
Yeah, and someone sent us copies of it. We probably all have them now. We just need to rip one and watch it. Yeah. I think we should put that on our list. Transformers animated. People are always asking for more animated from us anyway, so that'd be one way to do it. Anyway, thanks for the email there, Jeff. We will definitely take Molly Ringwald's Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone seriously.
Okay. Yep, it's on our list.
Where is the Forbidden Zone?
I assume it's just an expansion upon Bender looking at her panties in that scene from Breakfast Club, right? That's the Forbidden Zone?
I don't know why I was thinking Futurama for the first part of that.
Yeah, right. Oh, wrong Bender, yeah.
Wrong Bender.
Yeah. He's ruined all Benders now. thanks, Futurama Bender. No one knows any other Benders. Anyway, that's going to do it for the show. Our next film will be...
Hardcore Henry.
No, wait. It was another one.
We skipped either.
Genius.
We?
I thought we were doing. Aren't we?
Real Genius is not streaming.
Oh. That's why we're doing Hardcore Henry. All right. Hardcore Henry, a relatively new development. And
Take Genius.
We're gonna try to find a stable genius to replace Real Genius, but
instead we'll go with Hardcore Henry.
We haven't found one yet.
Yeah, it's also very how do I put this? Very gimmick oriented. It's just this first person action movie, and I've seen tiny bits of it and went, oh, I should save this because this will surely come up on Film Sack, and here we are. So next week,
Speaking of gimmick-oriented, did any of you watch Downsizing yet?
No.
Yes.
I want to. Brian saw it.
What do you think, Ebbett? Should we sack that movie?
Well, I certainly don't want to watch it again. I feel like, I talked about this on Recommendals on Wednesday, I feel like it was a movie with a really good premise and a really good development, but very poorly marketed to be something else.
Yeah, I agree. They totally went in another direction because it is definitely not the trailer you saw. And I noticed that also happened to Suburbicon, which was also another Matt Damon film, also marketed in a totally different direction. Matt Damon started picking these odd roles, and I don't think they know how to market Matt Damon in these unique roles.
Well, it's because he's Fat Damon now.
He's Fat Damon.
Yeah.
Wore a fat Jesse suit Plemons. For downsizing.
That's Jesse Plemons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Jesse Plemons is Fat Damon. Yes. Well, I mean, depending what thing you saw him in, but yeah.
Personally, I don't think downsizing is ready for sacking. I think there's enough modern problems in that film that we won't appreciate is out of place until we get a little further away from it.
I was going to say, yeah, we could film sack that one in 10 years, but
all right.
Right now.
It definitely does have a great example of lacking quality control in a process where he and his wife go in to do something simultaneously and there isn't a check on whether or not they're both sedated at the same time.
Right.
Ugh.
Well,
you need more quality control.
Worry not, because next week we got all the gimmick we can handle. With Hardcore Henry, so that's next week, which is on film or Netflix, or where's that streaming?
That's on Netflix.
It is on Netflix.
Netflix.
Okay, cool.
We are branching out though, folks. Whenever we're watching a movie, we're considering both Netflix and Amazon Prime. So
yeah,
keep those recommendations coming.
Yeah, please do.
Because Netflix is adding so much of their own stuff that they're not adding as much.
Let's just say they're adding too much quality content, which is not conducive.
I know. It's a great problem to have, but it causes a problem with Film Sack.
A little bit. Yeah. They got plenty of crap, but sure. You're right. And then I think
it's mostly
expanding
in the form of Christmas specials though.
Right. Oh my gosh, right now is a glut. But my wife's thrilled though. She loves this crap.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for the show. Thank you all for listening. Filmsack.com is our website. Again, email us, filmsack@gmail.com, and find us on Twitter @filmsack. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
I don't know.
We'll see you next time.
Punch him in the butt.
Punch him in the who? The what? The butt?
Don't punch me.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
I don't know.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.